Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone. Happy post-election Monday. Hopefully many people have a little sense of peace of mind now. I know we were all on pins and needles just waiting for any results to come out. So we're so excited this week to continue with the focus of diversity and inclusion. And in today's topic, we're going to talk with two best-selling authors about the idea of allyship in the workplace. Now, before we introduce you to them, though, we, of course, want to thank you for tuning in, being here with us. If this is your first time joining us here, welcome. The show has been on now for over 4 years, almost 5 years. And the purpose of the show is to help anybody out there connect to their purpose and to being the best leader and the best person in your life and having all of your hopes, wishes, and dreams come true. Now, that might be a lot to fulfill, but we are committed to somehow, some way doing that week in and week out. And before I introduce you to our guests and my amazing and wonderful co-host, Brandon Maslin, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsors who make today's show possible. The people at Markham Search LLC offer premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States. They offer contingency recruiting, executive recruiting, retained searches, and also have temporary and payrolling services. So please do keep Markham Search in mind for all of your recruitment needs. Now, without further ado, Brandon, I hand it over to you.
As always, grateful to be in doing this with you, and we might have to co-author our own book one day. But in the meantime, I'm happy to introduce these two illustrious co-authors of, like you said, best-selling books and just all around good men, which is apropos for what we're about to talk about. They have very, very, very illustrious bios. They both asked me to keep it short to give us more time to speak, so I'm going to honor their request. Brad Johnson is a professor of psychology in the Department of Leadership, Ethics, and Law at the U.S. Naval Academy and a faculty associate in the Graduate School of Education at Johns Hopkins University. He's based in one of those beautiful places on Earth called Annapolis, Maryland, not too far from where I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. And Johns Hopkins is down the street from my law school, University of Maryland, so go Terps. David Smith is an associate professor of sociology in the College of Leadership and Ethics at the U.S. Naval War College. And he can talk more about, they can both talk more about their work in Annapolis and around with sort of the military and all that, I'm sure, as they go along. I met David Smith first a couple of years ago. At a conference called the Better Man Conference. Our last guest, Patty Dingell, I also met at this conference. And I joke around that when I used to do these trainings I used to say I'm part of the world's smallest fraternity. We're called Male Feminists or Allies. And I never understood why it was so small. It's a great fraternity to be in. You don't get hazed at all. People tend to like you more and you do amazing work. And beyond that, you write amazing books. These gentlemen both wrote two amazing books, Athena Rising, How and Why Men Should Mentor Women, and the book most recently is Good Guys, How Men Can Be Better Allies for Women in the Workplace. It's gotten reviewed by Publishers Weekly. Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook said, if you want to do your part to build a more equal and inclusive workplace, this book will help. Adam Grant, also a New York Times bestselling author, said many men want to be better allies to women, but we aren't always sure where to begin. This book is a great place to begin. So gentlemen, with that, let's begin. Thank you so much for joining us. I do truly appreciate it. The show is Get Yourself the Job. We did this knowing the election was coming up and really thinking about how all of us, men and women, can do our part to create a more inclusive, supportive world. I'd love to hear just a little bit maybe about your journeys, even how you got into this work, and certainly what you've seen progressed since you've entered this work and maybe the trends you're seeing most recently.
Yeah. I'll start off, Brad, and you can finish, close us out there.
Sounds good, my friend.
Yeah. So Brad and I started this back in about, gosh, been seven years ago, I think now, when we started our work together, and we were both teaching at the Naval Academy at the time. As you said, I'm a sociologist. I focus all my research in the area of gender work and family. So looking at gendered perspectives of careers and work and how family interacts with that. And Brad has done all of his research as a clinical psychologist in the area of mentoring relationships and what makes for great mentoring relationships. And we were having some good conversations back in the day about how we could engage more men in this conversation and why weren't more men in this conversation. First and foremost, we were looking at how to level the playing field in terms of access to important professional resources like mentoring and sponsoring, advocacy in the workplace, and looking at the research, and there just wasn't a lot out there. And so we decided that we would do that and we would make the effort to do the research and go out there and pull this together. And that led to the first book, Athena Rising, that focused very, very much on what made for great mentoring relationships. And the methodology on there was beyond just bringing together the best social science and the best behavioral science evidence. And again, both books are very much evidence-based books. But also really important to bring in women's voices. And that was never more clear than I think Brad and I were talking to a couple of our female colleagues about the idea of the first book. And they said, you know, you guys are writing about women and gender and relationships in the workplace. And you realize you're two dudes, right? We're like, yeah, we get it. But it reinforced the idea that women's voices needed to be front and center as we were writing that book. And so we had the great opportunity to interview, I mean, a lot of really incredible women in every profession and industry out there, and to really hear from them what they most valued in terms of what worked in mentoring relationships and what they most appreciated about those male mentors that they had. And then we had a chance to go back and interview most of their male mentors and ask them about their own experiences in those relationships and why they engaged in that work and why it was important to them to do that. From there, about a year, you know, the book came out in 2016, about a year later, about time you and I met, Brandon, Me Too was going just viral, widespread around the world. And it was really changing the nature of a lot of the conversations we were all in. And in particular, Brad and I felt like we were getting pulled into more and more of these conversations around what it meant, not just to be a mentor or a sponsor in the workplace as men, but how do we show up as allies every day, no matter what level of leadership you're in, what you do out there. There was a broader conversation that needed to be had. And so, again, we looked at the research, not a lot out there because this drawn around race and gender has kind of been late to the game here over the last decade or so. And so we decided we'd go out in there and do our own research for this one in particular. So Brad, I'll let you pick it up from there if you want.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm just thinking of the focus of your show on getting that job. And I'm guessing that a lot of women watching, you know, this show can relate to the fact that, especially in male-centric organizations and male-dominated professions, women don't get sponsored and mentored as much, right? You know, you look at the evidence and you see men are very comfortable mentoring other men. And women are often falling through the cracks at the junior level, right? Because they look up the chain of command and it's mostly men the farther you go up. And so if men are not willing to lean in and engage and sponsor, women often don't get mentored. And for that reason, you find that when a woman has a male mentor, she makes more money and gets more promotions. And it is not because guys are better mentors. It is simply because men often hold those more senior positions. They're in a place where they can share their social capital. So why do guys sit on the sidelines? This is one of the major findings from our book, Athena Rising. You know, Dave and I were wondering, why are the guys not engaging as mentors? And this was even before Me Too. And we've developed this syndrome called reluctant male syndrome because there were so many factors here. You know, guys are anxious. I wonder if I make that overture, how that will be received, right? Or what people will think or what she'll think. I don't have a script for mentoring a woman. I have man scripts for all kinds of different relationships with women, but no one ever shared with me how to have a professional non-romantic relationship with a woman in the workplace. And so if I don't know what to do, I stay on the sidelines. Other guys struggle with biases, right? And they're not even aware of it, unconscious stuff. Yeah, she's really nice, but I don't really see her as a future leader, you know, in the company. So if that stuff is going on, men may not engage. So all of that was happening, and then Me Too came along. And, you know, we're happy to talk about Me Too. We have some strong feelings about, you know, the false narratives around that issue.
Wow, guys, so much to talk about today. First, before we dive into any further conversation, I want to acknowledge you both. I believe you both served in the Navy, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. I really want to thank you both, really. As veterans, you guys are the backbone of our country. And, you know, sometimes we kind of gloss over the fact that you sacrifice so much, your time, your energy, being away from your family. And, you know, having grown up in a family where my grandfather was in the Marine Corps for many years, I just want to pause and acknowledge you and all the veterans out there, all the veterans who might not ever get acknowledged for being able to be of service to the country. And so deep, deep gratitude for each of you and for every veteran out there. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you. It's a real honor and privilege to serve.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough. And that's, I think that's an interesting thing. I'd be curious to hear what your thoughts are on the book or in your personal lives on how gratitude might play a role in creating healthier relationships and symbiosis. Like if I were a man and I were thinking, okay, you know, maybe I might want to mentor someone, perhaps the safest avenue with the Me Too movement and everything going on would be to acknowledge something that one of your people you're working with that you're grateful for, an attribute that they bring to the table, or maybe it's a presentation they did. And then that kind of would bring you to a neutrality level and then begin to develop a relationship from there. Did you find anything in the book perhaps that gave you foundation to then build something upon where both parties felt safe?
Yeah, absolutely. And Dave, I know you've got important things to say about this too, but I'll just start with one of the main things we've discovered, Jennifer, is that, you know, we talked about those guys on the sideline. Their heart's in the right place. They want to be part of the solution. They want to mentor, sponsor women, but they're just not sure about that starting. How does that first conversation sound, right? And so too often men may approach a talented junior woman and say, I'd like to mentor you, right? I just use my creepy voice, but you know, it may come across that way. And so she's wondering what's going on, or what do you mean by that? And rather than do that, I like the way you framed it, Jennifer. I saw you give that presentation last week. You hit it out of the park. It was excellent. And I was just thinking, the hiring committee sure got it right bringing you on board. How can we keep you here? And if you'd ever like to talk about that, I've got an open door. Just come on by and let's chat. That is quite different. It's very contextualized. It reduces anxiety about, you know, that conversation. So I think that is an important starting point. And then it's all about trust, which in our work for good guys, we found that establishing trust with women, establishing friendships, is a key part of allyship, and men have got to take responsibility for that. But Dave, any trust thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, what Jennifer is bringing up, what came to mind initially was the idea that we found in both books for the research, the men that engaged either as mentors or were identified as being allies by the women we interviewed, they were all, a few things they had in common. One was they all had a sense of humility in terms of what they didn't know. And they were very open about that. And I think that's really important, because to approach someone, you know, really with this learning orientation is really important, because this is where you're going to learn and gain appreciation for and gratitude for somebody and what they bring as an individual, their unique perspective, their unique experiences they may have, something what they uniquely add maybe to the team or the organization, and then how you can learn from that, and it makes you better as well. And I think we heard that over and over again from the men in both books that we interviewed, about how they approach those relationships with that. They kind of wanted to come in with kind of a blank slate and acknowledge that, hey, you know, I've got a lot to learn here. And that humility played out in so many different ways. Some women talked about it in terms of gender humility. Others talked about it in terms of a cultural humility. and really approaching a relationship in that way. And I think that really opens us up to more collaboration, right? To appreciate the fact that, hey, there's something between us that we can add together to make something better. And I think that's, you know, we've all got a lot to gain when we approach relationships that way.
Completely agree. I remember I studied with a woman by the name of Alison Armstrong. I'm not sure. Are you familiar with her work at all?
I'm not.
I bet there would be a fascinating conversation if we could ever get the three of you on an interview together. So Alison studied men and women for 30 years. And I remember I did a class called Understanding Women, because, you know, I'm a woman, you would think I would understand myself. And I'm sitting there in the class going, that's why I do that. And how I love that she applied some of the stuff in business is I like to think of it as apples and oranges, right? So you have an apple who might be somebody who has more feminine qualities. And in today's world, I think it's important to acknowledge that there are different ways that people accept themselves and how they view themselves. And so you have somebody who has more feminine qualities and then perhaps an orange who has more masculine qualities. And we can all vacillate between our masculine and feminine. And I remember having something like just a drop that was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I never knew this. When somebody's in orange mode, be it a man or a woman, they become single focused, track the deer, hunt the deer, do this. And they actually can't hear or see what's going on around them. And so for me, having run a recruiting company for over 10 years now, what I found was there was often an accidental adversarial relationship between men and women in business, because you would have some women who were oranges and some men who were apples. But a lot of the time they wouldn't know how to connect with one another, because if you're talking to an orange and they can't hear you because they're focused, you might take it personally and think, oh, that person hates me. And so one of the big opportunities for growth, I think, for us as human beings is teaching one another to have empathy and compassion, that it's not you, you know, the person who's mentoring you isn't being short with you because you're a woman. That person's being short with you because they're single focused on something and they need to pivot and step away from that to be able to engage with you in a softer way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Reminds me a lot of Deborah Tannen's work around communication in the workplace.
Yeah, I just think it's so important to understand that as a baseline, that it's not a you versus me thing, that we don't all come in the same bucket of man or woman. We all have so many different flavors that we can show up in today's world. Brandon, what are your thoughts? What questions do you have about the book?
Well, I mean, there was a lot of alignment with what I was thinking, because, you know, and thank you both again for your service. And I find that being such a wonderful, I wonder how that played in to the worsening word that gets thrown around in our work a lot. You know, I've probably been in 400 rooms, 290 of them have been all women. And every now and again, I'll get asked the question of, well, why you, Brandon? Why are you going to have an issue if it's all women? And I say, well, the only issue is going to be if it's all men. In my experience, you know, that's the only time where it's been hostile, it's been ugly, it's been, and I thought that was beautiful that you pointed out humility as an entryway. Humility is an honest point, right? I always start a lot of presentations like, if I mansplain anything, smack me, right? Because I'm doing something horribly wrong. It's why I take a conversational approach, because I want to learn. I love getting in a room and learning together. I'm wondering if you can talk about, to someone, to get to what Jennifer alluded to, which is, where humility, how do you create humility? How can you have more humility? Or how does that traditional, I have to be an alpha, I must, you know, for example, one of the things they find is that a lot of times men won't apologize, because if they apologize, they will perceive themselves as weak. So I'd love to hear anything you have around those sort of ideas.
Yeah, really important, Brandon. And it reminds me of a recent strategy that Procter & Gamble used. They recognized that they were bringing in all these talented women. They weren't promoting them. They weren't even retaining them. They were losing all these amazing women. And they realized mentoring and sponsoring wasn't happening. And so they developed a mentor up, a reverse mentor program. And they started pairing all of these talented junior women with very senior men in the company. And, you know, the marching orders were that she was supposed to mentor him on things he needed to know about junior employees and women and, you know, all that stuff. And of course, what happened was he not only was he learning so much. He was enjoying the relationship, and they became really powerful for these older men in the company. And of course, what Dave and I refer to as the mere exposure kicks in at that point, right? Social psychology research shows that, hey, the more we interact, the more we like each other. And so if we can get beyond that initial sort of barrier, pretty soon these wonderful reciprocal relationships kicked in. So the senior guys were mentoring and sponsoring the junior women. They were continuing to mentor up. And so it really got to the heart of this reciprocity, mutuality thing that we find so important in all mentoring, but especially cross-gender. And as a guy, I have got to recognize I got so much to learn from her. And then when that happens, I need to tell her that. I need to thank her and let her know what I'm learning. And, you know, that sort of gratitude, again, as Jennifer was talking about, that, you know, that really fuels these wonderful reciprocal relationships. But as you said, Brandon, a key thing to get over at the beginning is men standing in front of the mirror practicing these words, I don't know. That's really hard for guys, you know, to just say, I don't know the answer to that. And so we too quickly fall into the guru model, right, of pretending we know everything, rather than, hey, I don't know, but let's find out together, or let me introduce you to someone who might.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me also that one of the reasons why men don't engage in this work is they also see this, you know, associate, and we find this in the research too, the association with like diversity initiatives or things around gender or with women. Again, back to kind of that weakness piece that you were talking about earlier, or this, you know, the research that we talk about in social psych is the wimp penalty. But the reality is that, you know, is the lies male feminists, as diversity, warriors out there, that the people who take up those causes, when they speak up on behalf or they get associated with that, you know, they don't get a penalty when it comes to performance evaluations. They aren't hurt in their advancements and promotions. It's in some cases it might help, but, you know, in other cases it's probably very neutral. The really interesting thing is, though, if you are for example, if around a gender diversity, if it's a woman and she says something about that, or is out there promoting gender diversity or standing up for women or gender equality, well, often, you know, they are going to be penalized, and they're going to see it in their performance evaluations. They are going to see it in the lack of opportunities and advancements out there. So the reality is, when as allies, when we step up for others self-interested, right? But, you know, again, there's that challenge around the wimp penalty. The other one is the zero sum bias, and in particular about how we see this fact that, you know, well, if for women to have barriers to their advancement removed means that somehow I as a guy, I'm going to lose, right? And there, that for her to win, you know, for her to gain equality means that I have to lose something, lose power, lose influence in my organization. And the reality is that we find, obviously, is that, you know, through collaboration, through more equality and diversity, we actually expand capacity. And this is what the research shows too. I mean, everything from the economic side, right, that we're losing out on trillions of dollars of GDP every year. And we're really hurting families in our society by, especially today, with more dual career, dual earner families than ever before, by not trying to remove the inequity.
Lots of people commenting. Hi, Reverend. Thank you so much for tuning in. And she's saying 100%. You know, I think it's so important, guys, to tie this gratitude piece in. As we're talking about this, you can't have any working relationship, male-male, male-female, female-female, without the gratitude piece. And I just want to do a quick shout out for a guest who's been on the show with us many times before, Dr. Paul White, and his appreciation at work about using the five languages of appreciation. And that is one of the, for me, core elements of having a successful team. No matter who you're mentoring, whenever I would have a new team member come in, I would ask them, how do you prefer to be appreciated? And I think Dr. White's work shows that 88% of people leave their jobs due to lack of appreciation. And imagine if we all just paused, we took a moment, and the people who were mentoring, the people we're working with, They said, how do you prefer to be appreciated? Do you want that quality one-on-one time? And I'd be curious to see, too, is for men versus women, perhaps, I have no idea, it might be that women want more one-on-one time and men want more words of affirmation, or it could be the complete opposite. But we can't go around blind in the dark guessing this stuff. And that's why it takes communication. I think that anything in allyship is going to first require strong levels of communication and willingness to see our blind spots.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it reminds me, Brad, and you probably have ideas about this too, but it reminds me of the, and we found in our work that in particular, the importance of having, for example, cross-gender, cross-sex friendships, close personal friendships in the workplace, the value of that was having this inner circle of people who you could count on to kind of have your back and to give you feedback. So for example, if you know, if you step in or you say something that didn't land quite right, you've got somebody there to pull you aside and go, you know, hey, when you said that today, I don't know if you noticed, but you know, several of the women in the group winced when you said that, and here's why. And then and you're like, oh, I had no idea. So they help to reveal some of the blind spots. They give you that, you know, again, only as a friend can do, because of the trust relationship and the gratitude you have in that relationship, can give you that kind of feedback that is so important. It also helps to remove what we would consider kind of the allyship gap. And this is a really aspirational part of it that, you know, a lot of times, as we said before, a lot of guys want to be and believe in gender equity and equality in the workplace, but just not really sure how to do it. But some guys believe in it, and therefore they think they're doing it too. It's much along the same lines of the conversation we've had in our country for the last 5 months about racial equality. And in particular, it's not enough to go, oh, well, I'm not a racist, so therefore, you know, I'm helping to create an anti-racist, you know, world that we live in. Well, no, it doesn't quite work that way. You actually have to do something to dismantle, right, to disrupt the status quo of what's going on there. It's not enough for you to be silent and complicit in that way.
Yeah, and when I heard you talking, Jennifer, you know, about that, finding out what your mentee or mentor most would like to have, it reminded me, one of the things that Dave and I have written about is the Michelangelo phenomenon in relationships. And it's this wonderful stream of research in psychology on close intimate relationships, whether they're romantic or mentoring or friendships. And it's all built on the metaphor of Michelangelo. So as a sculptor, he was quite humble. And he would say, when a sculpture was finished, you know, it emerged from the stone, he would say, hey, I'm as surprised as everyone else that David came from this. I had no idea what was in there. My job is to remove all the detritus on the outside so that this beautiful form that's already there can emerge. And we really think that the best mentors think that way, right? They have that kind of humility. That requires me to listen. It requires me not to try and fix her or fix her problem or jump to conclusions. I got to do the discernment. I got to listen. I got to hear what her career dream is, what her life dream sounds like. And then I have the opportunity to do the affirmation, right? Once I hear it, I can say, I see that. I see you that way. And I'm going to start looking for opportunities to let you express that, you know, in your career as you're moving forward.
One question that arises from what you're talking about, which is what you're seeing as productive for women and I assume healthy for men and organizations. Dave, the event we attended, I don't know if you remember, there was two breakout sessions. One was upstairs and it was for all the guys, and there was an event downstairs for all the women. And me being me, I beelined for the group that was all women, because I figured I don't know what I was going to learn upstairs, but I figured I'd pick up a tip or two downstairs. And a few guys were with me, but the number one thing I picked up there was, and this just came up for one of my clients, men, you talk about anti-racist. It's not enough to be, right? You have to be, it's an action. It's an action you take. And one of the things that came up downstairs that was so brilliant, they talked about, was about conflict, and they had about 10 tips. I remember one, it was number 5, and it was, don't talk to someone about their intent, talk about impact. Because what I've seen a lot from my clients, specifically women, and sometimes men is, well, that wasn't my intent. That wasn't my intent. It might not have been your intent. This was the impact. And I thought you did a beautiful job when you talked about that, hey, be friends with women because they're going to tell you the impact you have, regardless of your intent. I'm wondering, though, if you're seeing a trend, even in the 6-7 years that you've been, you know, heads down in this work, so to speak, or probably your entire lives, if there isn't a trend for more, let's call them the good guys, but let's talk, if we don't want to do that, let's use the mentors and the advocates and sponsors. Are you seeing a trend where more and more of those men are getting promoted? And, or are you seeing more and more of a trend where the men who are either by lack of intent or frankly intent doing harm are maybe getting not pushed out, but, you know, at least being slapped on the hand a little harder? What are the changes you're seeing on why it matters for all men and whoever can be an ally, right? Just, it's not always men. It's anyone in service of the minority, as I understand the word. What do you see the trends being for why we should all be good, fill in the blank, in this case, guys?
Yeah, this, to me, this kind of, this gets back to a little bit of the kind of the business case around this conversation. It's not completely, but it, to me, and most importantly, I think the leadership branding aspect and who you are as a leader. And, you know, I think we talk about this all the time, the fact that, you know, the 20th century, the workplace that our fathers and grandfathers, you know, grew up in, you know, that was one style of leadership, and it was a very masculine style of leadership. It was very direct, command and control, hierarchical, which fit a very, as Jennifer so well put it earlier, the orange, you know, outfit right there. All the oranges felt very good over there, right? And it aligned nicely. The 21st century, you know, a lot has changed, a lot has shifted, and I think what we're seeing shift as well, and those leaders out there that are doing the best at, again, adapting to what people expect and desire. And again, the workforce, because there's so many people in the workforce today, and we need, and we're all competing for talent, you're going to have to adapt to the workforce to some extent. And people, and I think the leaders are doing that right now. And we're seeing that, hey, if you want to recruit the best talent out there, oh, by the way, all the research shows us that, you know, upwards of like 40% of, in particular of women and other traditionally underrepresented groups, when they're looking for jobs, they're looking at that. They're eyeballing the company. They're looking at what they have on their web. They're looking what's out in the news about what they're doing and how transparent they are about what they're trying to accomplish and the work that they're doing. They're looking for them to say, hey, here's how we're walking the talk. We're not just, we don't just have a nice statement out there on our website. Here's what we're actually doing and showing it. And I think that's different, right? That's, I don't think the 20th century leaders necessarily needed to worry about that. Today you do. Investors are doing the same thing. And now that's hitting you right square in the pocketbook. And so you as a business leader have to take that into account. And we're finding all sorts of, again, accountability being put into that too for leaders, all the way up from to the board to the C-suite and on down. Today we're seeing more and more examples of how leaders are being held accountable for all of these different kinds of not just diversity and inclusion, but really just what their company is all about and who they're all about as a leader. You just can't be anybody you want today. Well, some people can, but not everybody can be that today.
And Brandon, I would just add too, you asked about, you know, how is it for guys leaning into this work right now? And I think, you know, the one danger I see is men who are superficial with this work, right? And these are the guys who want to come to work and throw on the male ally cape, as it were, right? And say, you know, I'm here as an ally, ladies, when they're not walking the talk, right? And they're not doing it in important areas. And, you know, a starter for Dave and I in our research for good guys is these guys don't really show up as allies for their own partners at home, right? So if you're not sharing in domestic work and childcare and homeschooling, you are not leveling the playing field. You know, if you're partnered with a woman, you're not really showing up as an ally, and you got to start there. Or, you know, these are guys who want to show up at a woman's conference for, you know, 45 minutes and then, you know, punch the ally ticket. But then they're, you know, they're in the break room with a bunch of guys bantering or telling the sexist joke. And I mean, women know that. They figure out very quickly who the real authentic allies are and who the more superficial guys are.
Thank you so much for hitting that point, Brad. I think it's such an important note to hit. One of my favorite things in the definition of allyship too is that allyship is not self-defined. The people who you seek to be an allyship with will tell you, oh my God, if there's nothing else, and it's beware of the person who goes, I am, right? Yeah. And we had Sean Layden on, former chairman of PlayStation, and he once did a panel, and you know, there were three people on a panel. One was amazing. Sean was great. The other guy hit all the right notes, but every woman at the organization I was a part of, most of the women in the room go, the guy, he's just full of it. You know, we just know it. And Sean got off stage, and before he could come to the back room, his colleagues at his company said, he didn't even tell you when he flew to Japan on his own dime to support our women. He didn't tell you about this. They were rushing back to tell us that he was being so humble that he missed half the stories. Yeah. And I thought that was just this beautiful moment of just true what allyship can be. And so thank you for hitting that point. It's so important.
I love that, Brandon. We actually tell men, you are an ally when she calls you an ally and not before.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Brilliant. And I think one of the things that was really promising in the research we did for Good Guys was there were so many incredible allies. Oh, by the way, these men, they didn't get to self-nominate the way into the book, self-promote their way into the book. They had to be nominated by a woman who considered them to be an ally. And these women gave us, there were just so many. There's no way we could have interviewed them all. But there were so many, and they're doing such great work. And I think one of the challenges we have is that as allies, because of the humility, right, that we're not out there talking about it. People are not talking about it. And we've got to find a balance out there about, you know, of showing and applauding and appreciating, you know, the work that's being done here. Again, not to put them up on a pedestal, because that is not what we're trying to do, but to demonstrate and to role model, and especially role model for the junior men out there, this next generation of workers out there in the workplace, that, hey, this is what's appropriate. This is what we expect of you. And we hope you're going to take it on as well.
Jennifer, you running a company and seeing this as long as you have and hiring, I'd love your thoughts on this before we...
Yeah, it was interesting for me, having run a company for, 8 years, 9 years, something like that. I had one male who came into my company. For whatever reason, we were a lot of females and a lot of women who had kids at home. We always tried to, you know, just support people who had families. And this one gentleman came in who had two daughters himself and was married. And my God, he was the best ally as the CEO of a company I could have ever asked for. Like, it was very reciprocal. He knew that I would do anything that I would ever ask him to do, and vice versa. And it was one of the easiest, most effortless relationships I ever had. But having not really worked for any companies, having more built my own companies, I had to go outside the organization to find male mentors. And that's why I'm a huge advocate to find the Brandons of the world, find, you know, the David and the Brads of the world, because for me, probably three of my greatest teachers that helped me get to the point where I was able to build a company and sell a company were my male mentors. I can actually probably name five off the top of my head. And I love that. So if you don't have somebody you can go to and feel safe with within your organization, know that Brandon is an executive coach, and that you have Brad and you have David and you have all of these incredible male leaders out there. And you can pull from that knowledge. And I certainly wouldn't have sold my company if it weren't for all of the incredible mentorship that these gentlemen gave me.
I think it's a great point you made about the CEOs with daughters. And it's an interesting, you know, a little bit of a tension, because sometimes men will stand up and say that, you know, what really got them interested and involved in gender equity and allyship is when their daughter was born. And a minute, and then there, all the women are like, oh, wow. So you had to have a daughter, right, to suddenly treat women equally. But the point, I think, is there's two here. One is that the personal connection is important, because it ties in, it gets in touch with people's sense of fairness and justice. And it might be a daughter, it might be a spouse, it might be a colleague, a peer, a mentee. But it's important to find that, because it helps to understand the motivation to do the work. And so I think that is important. And the other part of this is that I think recognizing that, again, these men who have daughters, the ones that really get it are the ones where they have a really meaningful relationship with their daughters and are involved in their in raising them and socializing and in the sports and activities and all the parts of their lives. The fathers that aren't involved and aren't engaged, you're probably not going to see that. So it's not just the fact that they have a daughter, they're an involved father in their daughter's lives. And the daughters are having an effect on them, and they're having an effect on their daughters too. Because again, if they're being good allies, the research, you know, when Brad and I did found that these daughters are more likely to go on to achieve their career aspirations, and they're more likely to go into non-traditional professions.
Totally understand. Well, oh my gosh, gentlemen, we can talk to you for hours. We're going to have to do another show with you about this. We can go on and on, but we want to make sure that people, you know, A, know where to find the book, and would love to hear any closing thoughts from either one of you on what people could take away. If it was like one little gem that people could take away from today's show, I would love each of you to share that and then remind us of where we can buy the book.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll start, Dave, and I think I want to circle back to this issue of sponsorship. And, you know, for any man listening to this show, and I hope there are a bunch of them, remember that a huge part of allyship is the sponsoring. And here's your litmus test, guys. If you have a talented woman that you are mentoring or that you know you should be mentoring, you've got to do the sponsorship. And the litmus test is, are you talking about her when she's not even in the room? Right? Are you telling other people how great she is, what she's achieved, why she's ready for the next promotion or stretch opportunity? If you're not talking about her behind her back in a positive way, you need to work on your sponsorship. That is absolutely required if we're going to get to real diversity and equity when it comes to gender.
Yeah, and those stretch opportunities are critical. And we all know this, and no matter what line of business you're in, that stretch opportunities are critical to moving up and advancing. And too often, again, guys get that based off, again, our potential, but women have to already have the experience in that to advance. And it's a catch-22 for women in so many cases like that. The last piece of advice I would have is around the same similar idea, but recognizing one of the things that was so critical in that we found a lot of the male allies in our book exhibited was the way that they understood how the limelight, the focus of attention would automatically come to them in a meeting, in a room, in any situation because they were a dude. You know, they were a dude who the influence, you know, already was there. And so they recognized that when that attention would come to them, when they had an opportunity to what they would call decenter, right, to take the focus of attention off of them and shift it to someone else, that they would do that. And they would think about, all right, so where can I shift the attention to somebody else? It doesn't need to be on me at this moment. Idea, but, you know, I really am curious what Jennifer thinks about that because she's really the expert on this topic. And you know, and just very subtly, just kind of tossing you the mic and giving you putting the light over there on you. And that decentering is so important because it's an acknowledgement of sometimes the privilege we have. And once we've acknowledged it, then we can figure out what we want to do with it. And so we hope more people will be really curious and interested in reading more about Good Guys and how we can get more men engaged in allyship. And you can find more about us on workplaceallies.com is our website for Brad and I. And our book is available through HBR Press, Harvard Business Review Press, and available in your local bookstore or on Amazon.com or your favorite place to order books.
Wonderful. Thank you guys so much. It was such a joy to have you join us here today. And thank you for being male allies, each one of you. And that includes you, Brandon, my friend. That's why I couldn't have thought of a better co-host when we decided to do this together, because you're just such a champion, my friend. And it's great to have champions who have a cause. You know, when you get out of bed, you want to make the world a better place. So I acknowledge each and every one of you for being one of those gentlemen.
Thank you, Jennifer. And thank you so much. You know how much I appreciate you and value you. And you've sponsored me by asking me to do this. Brad, it's been a pleasure to talk to you and get to know you. Enjoy that beautiful town of Annapolis. David, one day we're going to have one of those IPAs together, hopefully, again. And I genuinely appreciate you both. I've said it many times. I'll say it one more time. Best fraternity on earth is this group of men who are passionate about this work and are humble enough to do it. So I'm grateful to be in your company, seriously. Thank you both.
Thank you both for having us.
And Jennifer. Thank you. Delight to be with you.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. And we'll now turn it over to Brandon. You gentlemen are welcome to hop off as people run out to buy your book wherever they can find it.
Amazon.
Amazon, exactly, or bookstores. And Brandon, if you want to give us our takeaways, I know you're always the genius with the takeaways.
Yeah, God, it's second week in a row where like I like the threes. I'm a big three guy, and yet here we go. It's because my daughter's three. But I don't have three again, and we'll try to dwindle it down. If you get yourself a job on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else, you'll see our description where we put in these tips. Share your social capital. I love that. Establish trust. We talked about that last week. I think the trust in this modern world is transparency. Sense of humility truly matters. I think those are two amazing men. I hope you saw how humble they were while still being, they're big deals in this field. And it was just, just a joy, right? Mentor our programs. I love that. Mentor our programs. If you run a company, if you're in a company, start a mentor our program where young women mentor the men how to be better men or good guys. The more we interact, the more we like each other. Oh, that's beautiful. Practice the art of I don't know. Practice the art of I don't know. Allyship reveals blind spots. It is not self-defined. Sponsor. Stretch opportunities are critical. Shift focus and attention. Toss the mic. I love that visual. Find them on Workplace Allies. Buy their book, The Good Guys. We'll probably share the links and all the other things, but they really are good guys. But any good guy is only as good as the great women that surround us. So we're good, but Jennifer, people like you are great. And so any one of them will tell you the same thing. This weird thing that we get to do in this world is the greatest gift on earth, to be in partnership, to be in allyship, to be whatever it is. It's not about, for, I mean, yes, it's about giving, but what you get, I'll write 27 books. I'd be remiss if I didn't say one champion I had very early on was a man named Doc Mosca, who taught me what it is to be an ally and invited me into many rooms where I didn't feel like I belonged. And I've spent most of my life feeling like I don't belong. It took feminism to make me feel like I truly belonged. And that alone is why I don't understand why every man is not a true feminist and strives to be a great ally. Mm.
I love you, Brandon. I'm just like, so I'm tearing up. Like I really am. It's, I'm so grateful that there are human beings out there like you who care that deeply and that passionately, and that your purpose on this planet is to make a difference. And we all have a purpose. Every day when we set our feet on the floor, we can go into that day like, oh, I have another day. Or you can ground your feet on the floor and say, how can I make today the best day that I've ever lived, not only for myself, but for everybody around me. And I'll give you guys just a quick little add-on bonus tip if you ever just want to have fun with this. Every night before I go to bed, one of my mentors and teachers, a male, actually taught me this. He said, reflect on the day. And before you shut your eyes, I like to write it down on my iPhone, ask yourself, how could I have lived today better? And note, were you rude to somebody? Did you gossip? Were you inclusive? What did or didn't you do? And then you follow that up with, what are you proud of yourself for? And list one or two or three things. And then what are you grateful for? And I love to close out my day that way. So it's a good way to check in on yourself. Were you an ally to somebody today? Did you work on your communication? Were you open and receptive to feedback? And maybe you even said, I don't know. And if so, you know, you're on the right path. So thank you to everybody who's been here with us today on this journey. Thank you to Brandon, to David and Brad who joined us here, and everybody tuning in. If you left us any comments, we'll respond to you after the show. We're trying to get in the habit of responding during the show. You can follow me on my Facebook page, comments during the show. And, you know, please do leave us any recommendations, any ratings. Love the show, rate us. Hate the show, also rate us. We'd rather know, you know, and be able to grow and expand. And you can find us on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. You can find our Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook. And we just are so grateful to have you here with us every week. And thank you for joining us today for Get Yourself the Job.
Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.